This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The aftermath of every social revolution brings about change. Cultural norms and landmarks shift as our minds and hearts expand beyond the familiar. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose in the land of the living. This is our time to renew, revive, and restore the hope lost to the busyness of life. This is our time to dig again and rebuild from the storms of our past on a solid footing that holds. Welcome to The Foundation.
The Foundation. Foundation.
The Foundation of Hearts Grant is brought to you by Alive, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, The Deposit Insurance Corporation, Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, Collect, Marco's Pizza, the Ministry of Agriculture and Marine Resources, Rev Bahamas, and Ross Electric Motors.
It's the foundation, it's rocking the nation. Howard Grant's the host, Guardian Radio Station 96, bright 9, 12 to 2. It's the time you can call the show or use the text line. Yeah, he educates, he informs. He goes against the norm. He's really got that zeal. Plus, he's a child of God.
Foundation. It's the foundation.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant and your company, The Foundation, on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, live and in living color. We're here and grateful to be in the land of the living. I don't know about you, but we live in, baby. I know that it is a little saturated out here. As you get yourself prepared for independence, we say happy independence to our brothers and sisters to the north of us here celebrating the 4th of July today. So if you're out there, you're celebrating, I don't know if you're a half Bahamian, half American. I don't know how these things go, right? I don't know if you got two passports like certain people. We say happy independence to you and all and sundry, and just pray that the Father continues to be able to bless you and your endeavors as you move forward, celebrating, identifying these times. And I believe that these times are times of introspection. It's not necessarily just times for being able to celebrate. I think we do too much of the celebration. I don't know if this capitalism that kind of creeped into our minds and placed us in this kind of a position where we feel, consumed. We feel obligated to, you know, celebrate in these particular things without the reflection. So I'm hoping that you take the time to kind of reflect and sort of move on this course for growth and development as we move forward. Us, with the next 50 years, America, with, you know, their endeavors, I'm just hoping that they get back to the foundation. Can we say that? Can we talk like that? I'm just hoping that they get back to the foundation and back to the core, back to those elements. Maybe this concept and idea of liberation has gone too far, right? Should it have these borders? Should we go to the horizon of liberation and stay there? Is there an edge here, or is it just relentlessly, perpetually, and infinite? This kind of a desire to do as you please, as you wish. I don't know. I say a happy independence to all those persons. If you're celebrating a birthday, happy birthday to all those persons you're celebrating. In the month of July, my brother's birthday is on the 16th of July. My sister-in-law, her birthday is in July. And my good, decent cousin in Grand Bahama, his birthday is in July also. So all those persons celebrating a birthday, we say happy birthday to you in this particular month. And I want to do this. Make sure you pick up your Guardian newspaper, man. On the top of the paper right now, you can be able to see Pintar says that the government failing on BPL. You can see some more information. PM and Darvill expressed concerns over the banned foods and store shelves. Also, we've been able to see some things. Oh, this is yesterday's paper, right? Let me get the next paper. Because I was like, whoa. Well, we didn't mention this yesterday, but I thought it necessary to be able to get today's paper and identify these things. Gail Sanders, she passed away yesterday at 79. I don't think we mentioned that, right? But more importantly, I wanted to touch something for you. I just wanted to touch something for you, right? I wanted to touch something for you and say this in the spirit of decency and in order. Because, you know, we have a schedule and we have a show designed more specifically for today. But I want to say this to you. Thank you, my brother. The police missed the body in the crime scene. That's at the top of the Guardian newspaper. You can also see the Grand Bahama 50th Independent Special Editions in the paper today. Make sure you pick that up. Pick up those information. Also, the UN chief says that Haiti needs help and the robust international security force. So we can see that also Rupert Roberts is in the paper. We don't carry banned items, which is bananas, right? I know I taste some banned food somewhere. So make sure we can be able to talk about these things. Pick up the paper, but I want to touch this for you. I look at the paper and I read something entirely different. And I feel like social media is kind of excited to send this information over, send this information out. And the Tribune this morning, it says, Cornish, I am prime minister in Abaco. I thought this was absolutely bananas. I read the thing and then I read it again. And then what do y'all say? And the spirit told me. Entirely different thing. And the only thing I could see and hear is the words of my grandmother that says, baby, when you're hand in the lion mouth, you take it out easy, bit by bit. Cornish, Kirk Cornish, is in the newspaper this morning, splattered in the front page, saying that I am the prime minister in Abaco. I didn't know we had that kind of a quasi-government in Abaco. I didn't know that we had this kind of a commitment where we had we moved towards a republic already. Talk to me. Let's be very clear. I didn't know that we had a president and a prime minister. This is a lot that we're doing out here. I didn't know that there was a jurisdiction that you had the autonomy under yourself and disregard the central government of the Bahamas. I didn't know these things. But today I'm very grateful. Because the former prime minister, who was actually the prime minister of the country, and the minister for North Abaco, the minister, member of parliament for North Abaco, I think he had the right to be able to speak to the fact that I am prime minister in Abaco, because he's also the prime minister of the country. But now taking on this kind of a position, guys, we got to be able to break this down and find out a little bit more. Is there an eager desire? Do we hear something? Do we hear that kind of a distant chime? Is it a ringing? My God, I don't know. I hear it from it far off. Is there a distant chime? Can you hear it? It's almost similar to when the prophet says, go and see if you see a cloud. And then far off, there was a small hand. My God, it's beginning to ring. I just want to kind of put that thing out there and talk to you guys about these things. You know, in the spirit of decency and order, I want to do this and get to this. Now, you know, over the past few weeks, I've been telling you about this desire I've had to, as we move towards independence, to have a conversation that dealt with the inception and not just the tangibles. I think historians have done a human's job as it relates to being able to account for the facts and figures of yesteryear. So they've given you the tangibles, the facts, the figures, that immovable positions. But what I believe has been missing is the spirit, the feel, the idea, the temperature, the environment, the atmosphere of that time. These are the intangibles. And how do we invoke and sort of revive? I almost say conjure, but that was not the right word. Revive this spirit and concept and idea of this new Bahama land. We have to go back to the foundation. I told you I wanted to talk about an organization called UNICOL. Yesterday we did with a history standpoint, just a general synopsis and idea of where the organization started from. Well, today I made a commitment to you that we're going to have some persons come in and being able to speak with us more specifically and tell us exactly where we are. Today, we're speaking with someone that everyone has given me specifics on. They've all directed me, pointed me towards him. I initially made this telephone call to Mr. Franklin Wilson. He says to me, call Perry Christie. I spoke with former Prime Minister Perry Christie, and being able to have, over the course of maybe three or four conversations, he kept giving me these nuggets. And over every one of those conversations, he said to me, Howard, did you call Rawson McDonald? Finally tracked him down, had an opportunity to be able to speak with him. I said, Mr. McDonald, I was told to give you a call, so forth and so on. And he engaged me, says, Howard, I'd be more than happy to do it. We'll do it next week. But in the interim of that, he says to me, are you Howard Grant from West Grand Bahama? Yes, sir. 8 Mile Rock? Yes, sir. I said, my mother is Verne Grant. Verne Grant? And she works with me at Syntex. I said, oh, my God. She was in my department. I said, oh, my God. Isn't life like, isn't it like a small world? Isn't it just like a circle? To see that he's made a significant impact on my mother and even preparing her. This was in the 80s. This must have been in the 80s because Syntex, she worked there when I was a little baby going to nursery. And even those nuggets, and I didn't tell him this, but this is for me. Even those nuggets and those gems that she would have picked up over the way, over the course of time, the experiences that she's had led her to politics, led her to these things, being exposed to men like yourself and other women throughout the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to be able to introduce you to a gem. I want him to say a little bit more about his history and some things that he has done. He has been the true north as it relates to persons being able to say, Howard, he could be able to speak significantly to this. Mr. Rawson McDonald. Mr. McDonald, it is wonderful to have you with us, my brother. Say good afternoon to the Bahamian people.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you so much for this opportunity to speak to the Bahamian nation.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Yes. I appreciate it.
Man, I appreciate you coming and taking the time out to do this. I know that this is not, especially during this time, for all those historians and persons who would have been a part of the inception or just before independence. I know that you're busy. I know that you've been getting invitations. I know that you want to be able to participate, and persons are kind of leaning on you to get more and more information. So I'm grateful that you take the time out to kind of sit with me in these particular areas. To tell the Bahamian people what you've been doing over the course of your career.
Well, it's relatively long. I don't know if you have much time to say that. But it's always been in the sphere of continuing education and having also worked in the private sector. Firstly, at Navios Corporation in the 1960s, that's where I met Mr. Perry Christie, and also pivoting from that onto banking at Delta Banking Corporation, and then finally at Syntex in Freeport, the pharmaceutical, where I've had the opportunity to meet your mother.
Yes.
So many other young, intelligent, vibrant Bahamians who worked so diligently and so professionally that I was proud of her career projecting herself into politics, because she was always a person of ideas and a sympathy that runs through her bloodline for her Bahamian people.
I like how you put that, because, you know, other people in different spaces say she was always talkative. That's what they label me. You wouldn't be quiet, you're always talkative. But, you know, those sentiments run deep, and it means something significant that I feel like life comes full circle, and even I can kind of wean off your wisdom in preparation to move to higher heights locally and internationally. So I'm grateful for you taking this time and opportunity to do this.
Thank you.
Now, you said in 1960 you met Perry Christie.
Yes,
I did. This would have been a young Perry Christie.
Yes, I think he was 17 years old.
17.
At the time, yes.
Yeah. So talk to me about that relationship, how that began. What was this the organization you were working for?
Navios Corporation.
Navios?
U.S. Steel. It was a international shipping company. It's located where Kalina is now on Village Road.
Mm-hmm. And so you got into and I don't know your age and things like that, but you and Perry Christie was around the same age?
No, he's younger than I am.
Oh, he is.
But the important thing is that Navios Corporation was a breakthrough for Black Bahamians. Mm-hmm. It was a multinational firm coming to the Bahamas and recruiting outstanding Bahamians to work in there, like Carlton Williams, and who was passed on, and Eric Cooper, and Oswald Nottage, and there were so many that got their start there. It was a highly professional organization.
In the 60s?
In the 60s.
So we were still dealing with not necessarily an emboldened, pronounced line of segregation. It was fading, but it was evident. It still existed during this particular time. Talk to me about it.
The country was opening up. And in order to attract vibrant international organizations, you needed to have an open society. And at the same time, there were Bahamians who were graduates of Government High School, St. John's College, who were available to fill certain important positions. So they were recruited in numbers. It was very selective to work at that organization. And it was the first time I saw how a professional organization actually works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was some pushback from the government in that day and time because mm-hmm. they didn't want to see outstanding Bahamians migrating from the government sector into the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the salary structure was even higher.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, the government of the day was discouraging Navios corporations from hiring outstanding Bahamians because they felt it was taking away from them potential qualified persons.
Mm-hmm.
But Navios refused to do that and continued to hire.
Was Navios is based? There's not an American company, doesn't sound like. Was it an American company?
Yeah, the U.S. Steel out of Philadelphia.
Out of Philly?
Yes.
That's peculiar.
It used to be a huge, it was for tax purposes. It was shattering.
And even though that they were out of Philly, right? Out of Philadelphia, the city of brotherhood, brotherly love. There was still a great deal of pronounced segregation, even though we hear about these stories and read these stories of slavery during the civil rights era and so forth and so on, where persons would leave the South and head to the North for liberation. There was still this pronounced position of slavery. So you're saying to me, I would have thought that this was based out of New York, a mindset that says inclusion and diversity could be the driving force for community. This is out of Philadelphia, coming to the Bahamas, saying we need diversity to be able to propel us and move forward.
But it was multinational.
It was multinational.
And they're required to work abroad. They train their people specifically how to work in different cultures and ethnicities. So that's a part of their basic cultural design to mm-hmm. be able to work abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they were looking for the best qualified Bahamians.
Mm-hmm.
And there were quite a number of outstanding Bahamians that they drew upon. There was no alternative to doing what they did. It was out of necessity and out of good management as well to be able to identify. There was an examination required to be taken to get in. Very few people got in. It was very competitive. But those who got in had an enormous career and opportunity for advancement. And most of them went on to be entrepreneurs and business people and on to educators and on to other projects in their lives. And they were very successful.
It sounds to me like the template for Bahamianization. I love this concept that persons would come and you can see these things and expand significantly.
I think you said something earlier which I found significant, and that is that history runs like a river
mm-hmm.
in streams. Flows. Under the numbers, there is a spirit that has a life of its own that's also moving that you do not capture in the dates and the
mm-hmm.
times
mm-hmm.
because the spirit is such that you cannot touch it. It's an intangible.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was happening was that the time had arrived for change.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the air. The Germans call it the Zeitgeist of the age.
Oh my God, you're doing a lot. Let me write this down. But I've heard Zeitgeist before.
It was a change which was in the air, in the climate. And so history had to move along that stream, not only in the Bahamas, but in the United States and in Europe and the Caribbean and Africa. It was a time of momentous change. In the United States, the change came about and was sparked by the Civil Rights Revolution. And then there was the question of the Vietnam War. There was a question of Dr. Kaunda in Ghana going towards independence. There was Nigerian independence, there was Kenyan independence, there was the Caribbean independence. And we saw television coming into fruition at that point in time. And although we had our own philosophical reasons for shifting and changing, the impetus for some of that came from the United States, with Dr. Martin Luther King, the student movement. We began to read James Baldwin and Richard Wright. We began to read literature. We were being exposed to the world beyond the Bahamas. And in that spirit, we got into the river, into the flow of the times, and the changes almost inorganically came about.
I want to know this. Though, and I can stay with the same analogy that you have, though the stream is steady and the current is fast, there is those that oppose, like salmon swimming upstream. But there is sort of this idea that some persons can catch a whiff of it. They can see something, the foresight, the vision for the possibility that exists in this space beforehand. I want to know from you, who in your proximity at this organization, in the country, that you would have identified that had the foresight to know that this is a wave that we need to ride and ride it quickly?
Okay. The wave started even before the Burma Road incident in the 1940s. But in our community, which was very compact and relatively small, we had an intellectual by the name of Dr. C.R. Walker. I think that Mr. McQueenie mentioned that name when he was on the program.
The distinguished return to idealism.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
He was a man of ideas, mm-hmm. highly educated. He mm-hmm. had a prodigious and titanic mind. Mm-hmm. He lived over the hill among his people. He built the Reinhardt Hotel virtually by himself. He had a printing press that he ran. He had a mill that he also ran for people who have corn to be ground. He had that capacity. He was also a member of parliament. He was a spokesman for the workers during the Burma Road incident. But he was brilliant, and he lived among his people, and he taught. His was always liberation, self-governance, the opportunity to govern yourself. And so he taught that. You had Carl Francis, an extraordinary intellect, a man of enormous capability. Mm-hmm. He was a teacher of sound values and a minister of the gospel. Then you had someone like Rodney Bain, who was an educator par excellence, that taught and brought a lot of Bahamians up to the standard to take external examinations out of Cambridge in England, which were from the family, who were from the family islands and who were isolated. And so even before we talk about the UNICOM, the groundwork was being laid for the eventual bringing up of arriving at that particular stage. Mm-hmm. When that happened, you had the NCPA, which was the intellectual arm of the Progressive Liberal Party. People like Arthur Folks, Warren Lavarity, Jeff Thompson, Dr. Eugene Urey, who just passed, Edmund Moxey, Warren Lavarity, and so many others. So when change takes place, it isn't just instant moment. The climate had been developing for a long time, which culminated in the UNICOM. What propelled UNICOM was this. In the 1950s, scholarships were rare. But there was this zeal for education, for tertiary education. And so any number of persons were studying, doing A-levels, and those who were not in class doing A-levels were studying privately on their own with Carl Francis, with Mr. Bosfield and others to arrive at a level where they can really get into university. So in the early 60s, an enormous number of Bahamians went to university. Some went to the University of the West Indies, a lot of them went to England, some went to Canada, some went to the United States for an education. But the desire to return home was also very poignant. So in the summers, we came home. We wanted to share with our community the experiences which we had enjoyed being abroad. So you had people like B.J. Nottage, who was very brilliant, very forceful, very energetic. Perry Christie, Frankie Wilson, his brother, Stanley Wilson, Alfred Jarrett, Georgie Bethel, and so many others, young men and women, who gathered to discuss important issues of the Bahamas.
The initial gathering was about, because I get this. I want to touch this like this. When I had an opportunity to be able to go off to Cuba, I lived in Cuba for a little while, right? I had an opportunity to be able to, you know, the ideas that surround the carnal mind of what Cuba could be existed. But there was another experience, an experience that made me appreciate my home more. The butter that I saw there, the fact that for a tin of cheese, you have to catch a ride because money wasn't available, but you had these sources. It gave me a greater appreciation for the Bahamas. So when I came home, I wanted to share that experience. And that experience led to different conversations of how the community should develop, what we can do to participate, and being able to see ourselves move forward as a community. So my question to you is that, was the initial conversation about national development, or was it just shared experience that led to the blossoming of this conversation?
I think it was about being fully human and being fully involved in the...
Mr. McDonald, I love this conversation.
...governance of ourselves as a people. And
that fully human is big because we were viewed in a particular manner at the time.
Right. It was thought we can govern ourselves.
This is heavy what you're saying.
Yes. And so the issue was we could govern ourselves. And we are full human beings. And we have seen people like us who are able to achieve high intellectual achievement in their lives.
And we're quite capable of doing the same.
Right. You must remember that Black Bahamians formed majority, even of the educated masses in the Bahamas, as Bahamians. The top positions were being filled not by Bahamians. The top positions were being filled by expatriates. In the banks, for instance, even positions of teller, you had Canadians in the Canadian banks, Americans in American banks, British in the British banks. And these jobs were not Bahamianized until later on. But these are jobs which could have been done by Bahamians, but we were not allowed to get in because it was considered that we should not be in banking.
Mm.
That banking was not for us. And the only persons who were in the bank were those persons who were messengers, janitors, dressed up in khaki and that sort of thing.
The service arm.
Yes.
Wow.
But we always felt that, and this is taught, this is transmuted by our parents, that we are valuable, that we are made in the image and likeness of God. And that you can shackle a person's body, but you cannot shackle someone's mind and spirit.
I got to write these things down that you're saying, because this concept and idea that our parents transmuted both and gave us a resounding message, right? Spoke not only to our physical, but spoke to our spirit and said that you are bigger than this. I want to know whether or not there's modification. But we can get to that part of the conversation.
But let me finish this.
I got to take this commercial break.
Okay, that's fine.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the thick of the thing, and we're diving deeper and deeper right here on 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant, The Foundation. We're going to take this quick commercial break and be right back after this. Foundation.
Foundation. The Foundation. We'll be back right after this.
Come celebrate Independence the BK way with our new Independence King Combo. Enjoy a flame grilled beef patty. patty topped with savory bacon, arugula, crisp onion rings, and our special tropical sauce on a brioche bun. Served with fries and a drink for a flavor sensation fit to celebrate every year. Top off the Independence celebrations with our new Guava Sundae or frozen guava lemonade. Our Independence King combo and treats are available for a limited time at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
The Bahamas Public Parks and Public Beaches Authority invites all private companies and civic organizations to adopt a roundabout. This is your chance to stand out from the crowd. Beautify and enhance our local areas for residents and tourists alike. Just in time for the 50th anniversary of our independence. With this opportunity, you can engage persons on the go, generate media interest, and promote your company. Stand out and celebrate 50. For more information, you can call 242-604-3750.
Collect. The Bear of the Bahamas has given you 5,000 more reasons to be proud to be 50. Just purchase a 3-pack of Collect at participating liquor stores and bars for your chance to be one of our 5 lucky $1,000 winners. Winners will be announced every Friday starting June 9th. Collect's 5K giveaway to celebrate 50 years of independence is officially on. Just purchase 3 Collect for your chance to be one of 5 $1,000 winners. Follow Collect on social media for more details. Collect, the Bear of the Bahamas. Drink responsibly, but...
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant in your company, The Foundation, on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday, July 4th. We're out here and we're being able to do this. I can't even deviate. I just can't do it. I got to dive deeper into it. If you're just tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with none other than Mr. Rawson McDonald, being able to recount some of the intangibles of a time before independence that led to the change that we've seen today. As we've been on break, Mr. McDonald, you started to talk about some intangibles. You started to talk about this feeling, this eye, this what was in the air at the time. And you started to talk about this more specifically, and I wrote it down, this idea of that you were bigger than you are, that you are bigger than you are now, your immediate position, that you said was transmuted by our parents, that runs deep. I want to touch this. This runs deep. Because it runs deeper than a conversation in the 60s. It goes deep into our slave past, where our parents, despite the tribulation that existed around us, how they clung to both faith and affirmed their position in faith to the kings and queens that we are. They wrapped it in their own ways. But my question is, for the next part, though, I think we've lost that. Do you think we've lost that?
Yes, I think we have. And I think we've lost it because we've been successful in certain areas, in the material and commercial areas. And we have, in some ways, abandoned our value system and our value structure upon which our spirit is actually based as human beings. For instance, although our parents were not intellectually lettered, didn't go to universities, they had a sense of value, and they had a sense of Christian values and ethics, which they passed on to us. The church was the foundation of their lives, and the Bible was the constitution by which they lived, and they injected that same spirit into their children. As a matter of fact, I can say to you that the majority of persons, almost 99% of the persons who are in UNICOM, went to Sunday school and were members of the church. UNICOM never advocated atheistic ideas and totalitarianism and adopted Marxist, Leninist socialism. It was always a democratic approach to advancement. But at the base of it, people went to St. Barnabas Church. They went to Transfiguration Baptist Church, like me. They went to St. Agnes, which was in the center of our community. And all the churches around, Ari Cooper, Colebrook, and the rest of them. And when public meetings were held, it was always held by virtue of opening prayer, a hymn, a psalm. And the centrality of the spiritual life and the value of Christianity was injected into us. And so therefore, through our whole life, whatever organizations we joined, what happened was that this kind of spirit was injected into that. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, our revolution was peaceful. Mm. No one advocated violence. We advocated love.
But there was
progress.
There was consistency and this sort of a determination for the liberty that we seek, but not necessarily this attachment to say that we need to be violent at any means necessary. You always took this peace into your meetings, this peace into your conversations, right? Did that peace not exist during the Bremen Road riot? There's something that tilted the thing.
Sometime the pot boils over.
Yeah.
And in these particular circumstances, the pot boiled over. But there aren't many incidents of that nature where that would actually happen. Mm-hmm. Now, in the case of the movement which came after that, the leaders of that were ministers of the gospel. Mm-hmm. You had a man like Dr. Brown. I mean, he was extraordinarily involved, capable leader. And he never advocated violence because the idea of freedom is to make the person who is unfree whole and to remain whole. And if we became so suffused with malice and hatred and anger, it will destroy us as a people.
You're blowing my mind.
So the important thing was to come out of this whole, as a whole, full human being. It was to protect us.
You're blowing my mind today because I have to, let me tell you why. You caused my mind to run all the way over to Fred Hammond, right? You caused my mind to run over to the Black Panther Party movement in the United States of America that said that we have to protect self and had the right to bear arms and being able to take on this very strong, even today, even now, Asada Shakur is on the most wanted list and she had to flee America. She lives in Cuba right now as a result of somebody that got killed on the New Jersey Turnpike, right? Now, I say that to say we've seen how the Nation of Islam, how it has crumbled during this particular time where egos got involved and this idea of being able to protect yourself and fighting for these things physically has caused their movement to be able to deviate, as opposed to the spirit that existed with Martin Luther King, the idea of a quiet revolution, the idea of not fighting back, the idea of remaining consistent and pushing. Are you saying to me that this was the spirit that's associated with the independence that we have today? The idea of this introduction being led by a spirit of peace, but remaining consistent to be able to get to the dreams that you enjoy?
Yes. Doris Johnson, Dr. Doris Johnson, was a spiritual woman. Carl Francis was a minister of the gospel. They were leaders within the movement, and they never advocated violence. They always felt that as Christians, we are all made in the image of God. Mm. And if one man destroys another man, whether that man is white or black or pink or green, it is wrong to do so, and that if we adopt violence, we could also be consumed by a stronger power. So our power was supposed to come from within us. They were trying to make us proud of who we are, to develop values and systems and structures within ourselves so we can stand up as full human beings. Because if we were just concerned about vengeance or taking spite out, it will destroy us and we wouldn't be able to build a nation.
It goes contrary to faith, because vengeance is mine,
says the Lord.
Talk to me.
Says the Lord. The Lord will take that vengeance, but he is righteous to take that vengeance. He created us, and his vengeance will be a vengeance of justice and glory and honor. But not us. We are not supposed to do that.
I want to know from you, and the show is structured in such a manner that I feel like I want to push through my commercial breaks, but this is how the people pay the bills.
Okay.
So I got to take the commercial break, but when we get back, I want to know from you this inception to Perry Gladstone Christie. You said that you met him at Navajos, right?
Navios.
Navios International. You met him there, 17-year-old Perry Christie, with all his hair intact and his charm. I'm sure it was coming on strong at the time, right? You met him, and something happened. When we come back, I want to talk about the inception of that relationship that led you, I'm sure, in your position, in your posture, looking to be able to find a way for yourself and make something for your future. How did you get involved in something like this? I'm going to take this commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, we're sitting here and talking with none other than Mr. Rawson McDonald. He is absolutely blowing my mind. I appreciate this. I hope you guys are enjoying it. I see that there's some telephone calls are coming in. Let us get this good base out before we start to dive deeper into the conversation. We're going to go to commercial. We're going to go to news and be right back after this.
The foundation.
We'll be back right after this.
Alive believes loyalty is not without its rewards. We're offering you a summer full of deals to say thanks for sticking with us. Enjoy free roaming, free data, cash back, and more incredible deals with the certified fastest network in the country and top-rated service. Alive gives you something worth holding on to. Hold on to the best in the business. Alive, believe in best. Terms and conditions apply.
Let me ask you a few questions. What's your name?
Pam.
Favorite food?
Steak.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Is your money safe?
It's under my bed, I guess so.
Are you serious?
Yeah, why?
Unless your money is in a bank or credit union that's a member of the Deposit Insurance Corporation, there's no guarantee it's safe.
Yeah, but what if something happens to the bank?
Your Bahamian dollar deposits are insured up to $50,000, so you'd still be ahead. Plus, your mattress might catch fire. Then what?
Man, those banks and credit unions are looking good right about now.
Visit the DIC's website at www.dic.bs. Protection for your money, guaranteed with DIC.
It's back, the 35th annual Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, July 17th through 28th, inside Kendall Isaacs Gym, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., for boys and girls 5 through 18. Sign up your child now at South Bahamas Seventh-day Adventist Office, Tony Williams Highway, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's the Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, July 17th through 28th, at Kendall Isaacs Gym, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Special appearances by NBA stars, legends, and coaches. The 35th annual Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, it's back!
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Foundation.
foundation. Foundation. Foundation. The foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant in your company, The Foundation, on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, July 4th. You're going to be able to see a great deal of things. Now, if you did not, and I feel like I got to dive right into this thing, if you did not have an opportunity, I want to be able to, I implore you to go back, guardiantalkradio.com, guardiantalkradio.com, or listen to the rerun later on this evening. And listen to this conversation, man. This is amazing. We're sitting with none other than, can I give you this label? Historian. I want to do that, right? Spiritual historian, right? None other than Mr. Rawson McDonald, being able to account a great deal of the sentiments, the charged atmosphere of the time before independence. Now, Mr. McDonald, when we left off, we really wanted to be able to recount more specifically an engagement, the inception, you know, even in sort of your preamble and giving us the history, you spoke to the idea that there were so many brilliant, we got to do a part two of this conversation, by the way, there are so many brilliant young minds who had great aspirations, who were educated, who were committed, persons like Carlton Francis and C.R. Walker and others who were really educating young persons and preparing them to take their A-levels, their O-levels, and really preparing them to move off to university and lift that standard. There were so many bright minds, even at this organization that you were working for, that required you to take a test before that you could identify it was potent in the environment, that there was a rich desire for education. You met a 17-year-old Perry Christie, young, vibrant, excited, fresh from college, this kind of a desire to be able to do a great deal of things. I want to hear about that introduction, that idea, and how this conversation even got started with Unicall.
Yes, it was a pleasure to meet a young 17-year-old, Perry Christie. He was in so many ways extraordinary. But the one quality which he had was the insatiable desire to learn. And he was a voracious reader. Whenever you put a magazine in front of him, for instance, an Ebony magazine or Negro Digest, he would read it. When Dr. King made wrote his letter from Birmingham jail, and I bought the newspaper, I bought the Ebony magazine, put it on my desk, and the next thing, Perry Christie was reading it. He was constantly reading and debating and wanting to advance himself. And he was always asking important questions about studies and about law and about literature and about philosophy. We were always having these discussions going on. And he was always willing to learn. He was always willing to if you put anything in front of him which was in letters, he'd read it. Mm-hmm. And then he was also accommodating. He had a winning personality about himself. He endeared himself to people around him.
Charming.
He's very charming, very, very, very friendly. But he was also competitive. He was an athlete. And he went off while he was at, I think it was Carifta, and he won the Scott Pippen jump. Or something of that nature, and he won a medal, and he came to work wearing the medal. But he was
sounds like Christie.
Yeah, people gravitated towards him even at that early period. People gravitated towards him, and he was always honorable, and I developed an affection for him from that point.
A few years a senior.
Yeah, I was a few years a senior. But he was also, he would draw you into discussions about life, about philosophy, about literature, about law, about anything in which he hadn't, his mind was capacious. He always wanted to be able to learn something new. And but at the same time, he was jovial and endearing and friendly as well.
Not so serious all the time and kind of structured. He still gave room for a laugh, a smile, a participation to be able to do some stuff.
And he liked people around him.
Yeah.
He gathered people, gravitated towards him.
Yeah. How did this start? Was this, how did this unicorn start? Because listening to Sir Frankie Wilson being able to take on this position to speak about a return to idealism over at the University of the Bahamas, that's why this all started for me. When he said that unicorn was the brainchild of Perry Christie. That's what he says.
Yeah.
And I thought it was peculiar because the studies that I've done and reading the newspapers, 1967, when they started to talk about these things, it was Frankie Wilson and his brother who was at the forefront, as
Sandy.
Opposed Sandy, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to a Perry Christie. Tell me about those conversations that really started the spark, this sort of an idea for Unicorn.
See, what happened was that the students who were off the university wanted to come home for the summer and did come home for the summer, some to work mainly. And then when we came home, we found that we wanted to find something to do. We wanted to share whatever it was that we learned with our friends and the public who did not go to university. First of all, it was Unicorn, then Unicorn. So that it wasn't exclusive. It was open to our society as a whole. And anyone who wished to join could actually join. But even underneath that, you had people like Al Jarrett, Frankie Wilson, Stanley Wilson, Georgie Bethel. There was whole, outside of Unicorn, we were friends. And we met as a group for lunch, to watching sports, and doing things together. But what sparked Unicorn was the desire to share what was learned abroad in university with our Bahamian counterparts, with our friends, and to find something intellectual to do. In addition to going to nightclubs and playing sports, and we wanted to round it off by having discussions. And as I said before, the zeitgeist of the time was that we had to be serious because we were moving towards independence and self-governance. So we had to also have a serious thinking cap.
And back to what you said about freedom, this liberty and freedom that you spoke of, that you were trying to introduce to people, was a wholeness, becoming a whole man.
And in addition to that, ideas. Unicorn was a think tank for ideas as well. As Ms. McQueenie said, that you cannot develop any organization that permanently stands unless you have ideas for growth, development, and for advancement for the future. Mm-hmm. Without ideas, anything, any organization dies.
You really touch a great deal of these things. And so I want to kind of move it along in terms of being able to talk about some things. More specifically, we know that there is sentiment. I've spoken to a great deal of people who was a part of independence or who existed during this particular time in one space or another. And there was always this sort of an idea that says there wasn't always 100% participation. Everybody didn't want to be involved. A lot of persons didn't want to move towards independence. Even blacks, some persons who had relentless support for, not for the PLP, for the opposing party, the government of the day or the colonialism that existed in that time, persons are giving me a mixed account. I want to know from you, what was the spirit that existed during that time amongst those persons that you had conversations with? Did you get this sort of a mixed bag? Was there a sense that says we need independence, but not right now? What was going on during that time?
I think the primary desire was to be able to get the vote, the franchise. Because voting was up to, women didn't vote until 1960, didn't get the right to vote until 1961. Mm-hmm. Complete male suffrage was relatively new. That didn't come until 1959. In the election of 1962, this came across very, very powerfully because the PLP party won the majority of votes but lost the election. Mm-hmm. So the first thing to do was to make sure that every Bahamian vote counted. And so therefore, the colonial secretary and others came down and looked at the boundaries, and then additional seats were opened up, particularly in Nassau. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. because the preponderant population was in Nassau. Mm-hmm. But the majority of votes were in the Family Island. Mm-hmm. So as that shifted...
Because this, you voted based upon land acquisition.
Yeah, it was. It was so stretched out. It had no relationship to the number of people in a particular constituency voting. Mm-hmm. And so the prime thing was to do that, to get the full expression of each person is entitled to a vote, and that vote should be equal and it should count. The issue of independence came afterwards. Mm-hmm. Now, the Bahamians tend to be relatively conservative. All right? Mm-hmm. And the idea, although the idea was produced and was thought about and talked about earlier than the time it came about, it was never pushed forward as such as an issue to be resolved. People like Eddie Hanna and like Carl Francis and others were prepared for independence because we felt that the majority rule itself wasn't sufficient because we were still a colonial empire, a part of that colonial idea and concept. Mm-hmm. So that came. Bahamians as a whole didn't endorse immediately the issue of independence because they were afraid. And the propaganda was very strong that, you know, that if we are independent, we'd be abandoned, we wouldn't be able to govern ourselves, we'd lose economically, we wouldn't be strong, we wouldn't be able to travel to the United States, businesses would leave. And so this propaganda was being pressured and pressed on our people. But there was a very strong desire for independence. And furthermore, the British wanted to leave anyway. After the war, the Britain was no longer a first world power. Mm-hmm. Britain, the British pound,
Second World War.
Was being sustained by loans from the federal government of the United States.
Yes.
So not only was the Bahamas being made independent, but all the places in Africa and the Caribbean were also being made independent. So whether we wish to be independent or not, it was going to be forced on us. But what came first was internal self-government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But the leadership that we had in the 1960-67 was, without equivocation, perhaps the strongest that we have ever had in terms of the ability to articulate a direction.
Vision.
And the vision.
Okay, come talk to me.
For the.
I was waiting.
Right.
Because that's the, for me, that's the linchpin, that's the key, that
yeah.
is the core of it, vision. And the articulation thereof. I don't, a lot of persons be able to look at leadership over the course of our last 50 years and try to identify leadership that inspired, that invoked this sort of an idea to move in a particular direction. And they say this one was the leader that actually moved us in the direction. And we have not found. Though we had great management, though infrastructural development, though international relationship, foreign direct interest, so forth and so on, has been able to come to the country and we find ourselves good, regionally, internationally, and otherwise. The vision that really provoked us over this ledge still remains the strongest government that the country has seen since independence. And that was 1967. That mm-hmm. is the PLP government.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about
There's
it.
There's no question about it. I think that, again, going back to what Ms. McQueenie said, ideas have an enduring vitality and energy.
Yeah,
it
because
is
former
fuel.
Prime Minister Perry Christie, I mean, former Prime Minister Lyndon Penland is gone.
Yeah, so we need to fill that.
Ideas.
Right.
That's, still live on.
That space of ideas. And we've got to renew ideas and project additional ideas based upon where the country is today. So we need to talk about a direction. Where are we going from here onwards? What do we want to be like 50 years from now? What is strategic planning? What kind of citizens we want to have? What kind of society we want to have? What kind of progress and economy we want to have? These are things which public intellectuals and people should be thinking about now, because the Bahamas is a wonderful country. God has given the Bahamas perhaps the most beautiful, are most productive, and he gave us wonderful people, and he's given us blessings. But in order to project that, we need to have new ideas, fresh ideas for the next 50 years to propel us in the direction we want to go.
And I want to talk to you about that. I want to take to talk about right where we are. This vision that was cast into the minds and spirits of the Bahamian people that caused mama them to go home and say, baby, you ain't never got to do this no more. We got a government that can do some things. We can change this thing. You can go off and get yourself educated. You could do this. You could do that. You could be able to chart the course to the purpose that you've been called to and destiny that we know that exists in you. This is sort of the conversations that happened in the over-the-hill communities that shifted the course of how things happen. Now, this idea that infused persons that went over on Fort Charlotte and saw the Union Jack fall and the Bahamian flag raised. I want to know from you, have we deviated from those goals, those ideas, that vision that was cast initially? Though, like you said, there should be modification, there should be an evolution of this process. Do you think we've deviated from that over the course of the last 50 years and gone awry? Talk to me about it.
I think although we have a flag, I think we need to have a nation. We need to have a patriotism. We need to have our people
united
and understand the direction in which we are going and what the plans are for us as a people.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in terms of physical development, not only in terms of infrastructure, but in terms of civic virtue, in terms of our ability to have the kind of society which flourishes. For instance, we want a society where crime is mitigated to the point where if you felt this afternoon that you want to go on the beach and lie off and read a book, you're not afraid that you're going to be attacked. We need to find a way to bring the kind of peaceful existence that we used to have in the 60s and in the 50s, where violence is not something which endures the way in which it has. But what we need to do is we got to train our citizens that citizens have a particular responsibility as civic people to assist in the governance of the country in every area, in health and cleanliness and business. We got to become full citizens. And I think what we need to do is we need to teach our people what being a citizen is all about.
Give me the first step of how you believe this teaching
education
should come about.
First of all, I think it's a question of education.
Is it formal in terms of the traditional schooling, or is it traditionally?
Well, you have it
from
in
the home.
Okay, firstly, right? Because that's the bedrock of our society, in the home, okay? You have it in schools, all right? You have it in the churches. You have it in the civic organizations. You have governments that's relying upon our society as a whole to capture this concept and to project it in our society. It cannot be done by politicians alone. It has to be at the base, at the bottom of our society, at the root of our society. And it's possible because by and large, Bahamians are orderly people.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some difficulties and we're still going through a period right now with lawlessness. But fundamentally, Bahamians are orderly people.
And if we have deviated from this order, this sort of commitment and adherence to law and order in the country, based upon what I'm hearing from you, that must mean that there is the stifling that exists within the family structure.
Yes, it has to start in the family. There's no substitute for the foundation of our development. As young people, as children, it starts in the family. Then it goes into the neighborhood. Then it goes into schools and goes into churches. Then up top, it goes in the government last.
You started to say something on the break as you and I spoke, that we have an inverted, is it society or political, how is it? We have inverted this concept and idea of where leadership should start with or where the influence should start from. Talk to me about that.
Right, because I think we tend to feel that decisions could only be made from the top and not from the bottom. But normally in any structure, particularly in a nation, it ought to start from the bottom and percolate upwards rather than the other way around. Because the commitment to the kind of society we want to have starts early, it starts as children. And the agencies and infrastructure or, and institutions around that. It's what sustains it. Your neighborhood sustains the neighborhood cleanliness. Your church and your Sunday school sustains moral and ethical behavior. Wow. Your schools, you know, deal with the question of education.
Wow.
What government deals with is the question of funding. But the education process begins in the home, in the churches, in the schools. It moves organically from the bottom towards the top. Right now, it seems to come from the top down, and that's why it doesn't percolate, because it's not designed for that process.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a wonderful conversation. I am truly grateful for the opportunity to be able to be here and record this, to really capture the spirit and the essence of what existed during this time. I want to say this. Looking back, is there anything that you would do different or that you wish that have been different in the organization that was Unicall, which eventually became Unicom? And I ask that question because I listened to Sean McQueenie as he was speaking to the Return to Idealism, and captivated by the conversation and his sort of admiration for C.R. Walker, he indicated that there was a shift in the organization beyond people going back to school. He said that Frankie Wilson was approached by the Progressive Liberal Party in terms of being able to formally present himself as a candidate. Mm-hmm. And that led to a power vacuum, mm-hmm. Leadership vacuum within the organization. Talk to me about whether or not you believe that things have naturally evolved, but talk to me about whether or not you believe that things could have been done a little differently to lead to sustained growth and development of the organization.
Yeah, I think that most organizations, to be able to sustain itself, need to have a plan which deals with the present, the immediate future, and the further future. Because organizations tend to come mm-hmm. and tend to go, particularly when the leaders shift positions. You leave a hole, you leave a gap in mm-hmm. your organization. What we needed was to have people who would rise up and fill those positions. That didn't happen. But at the same time as we had Unicom, we had other organizations going simultaneously. You know, mm-hmm. you had the Boys Brigade, you had debating societies, you had fraternal organizations. You had other organizations doing other things as well. Okay? But today, it mightn't be Unicom, because what's happening today is that we have a brain drain.
Mm.
You see, when I came back, and when Frankie Wilson came back from university, they came home.
Mm-hmm.
It was unusual.
No one wants to come home.
No, it's unusual for a Bahamian who got an education abroad to not come home. The idea was you going abroad to come back home. Today, I used to award manage scholarship programs of merit scholars at SENSEX. And these were top students who have gone off to Harvard and Yale, Columbia, University of Miami, everywhere in the world. They haven't come back. Our students don't all come back. The majority of our students stay abroad. They offered positions in Fortune 500 companies and research centers and hospitals and manufacturing and engineering. And so that brain drain leaves a space that is very difficult to fill. So unless we find a way to bring back some of that and also to nourish intellectual development and public intellectual development in our society, the space for ideas would be eroded. And we've got to be careful about that.
When we initially came in and you started to talk about, you know, the concept and idea that exists in this particular space, you started to talk about, you know, what we do here and how it's important and being able to bring persons into this conversation and whatnot. You know, some things popped in my mind, right? And being able to bring those things in my mind and bring it full circle to this conversation, I say that there is an opportunity for youth. There are older persons who have been the proverbial gatekeepers for a long time that like the Bible says, they're stiff-necked and self-indulged, consumed egotistically with this concept and idea that I am king, and wish to hold on to that position until the last nail knock. They do not. We don't see now. When you could speak so eloquently about C.R. Walker and Reverend Cooper and all these persons who would have done so much to give back to the community. I see Mr. Craig Flowers comes and talk to us about this person. Oh, my God. Mr. Flowers, forgive me. I forget the gentleman's name that taught him, a blind man in Bain and Grandtown, that taught him how to count, how to read, how to write, how to do these particular things. He continues to be able to pay homage to these persons. But now you don't have that. You don't have where persons could look back and say, there is a local mentor. We look to people like Lee Brown. We look to people like, some persons to be as superficial as they can or as immediate as they can in terms of accessibility, and look to people like Steve Harvey. All over the world, they're looking for influence when this influence and information culturally exists here and people holding on to that. So talk to me about that.
I think that we've lost a sense of community.
Mm.
And because of our proximity to North America, we become very individualistic.
Mm.
And we've adopted habits.
You mean young and old?
Young and old.
Okay,
we've
talk,
all
to
been consumed
talk to me. Talk to me.
With that. For instance, I didn't grow up, nor would, I'd say, dare say, Franklin Wilson and his brother and the rest of us grow up with television. And when we did have television, you had maybe four or five channels. The reception wasn't very good. And we only watched it for sports and for news. But we were in playgrounds, in libraries, at the church, at the school, in the community in which we lived. We didn't live in gated communities. So we were involved on the Southern Recreation Ground playing sports, or we were in the library, or we were in some other space where we could engage with our friends and with people in the area, young and old, college graduates and non-college graduates. And we had space for discussion and debate. We were required to read, and reading was something which we naturally did, and we were consumed with public affairs, and we were knowledgeable about it, and we had an interest in it. Nowadays, it's possible to give a young person a TV in their own room and a telephone, and they do not necessarily want to relate to...
They are detached entirely.
They're detached.
You could ask a young person right now, who's the prime minister of this country? They have no idea. Delivered him.
Yes. And so it's a problem we've got to deal with. What do we put in place to reorganize? And this is a worldwide problem. It isn't just for us. Because it exacerbated because we are small and we can see what's happening. But the idea of conversation and the idea of just having friends to discuss matters, It's a challenge.
I want to know whether or not, and then I'm going to take this commercial break. Mm-hmm. I want to know whether or not you said we have to find a way to be able to make this. The first thing that popped in my mind is incentive. But beyond incentive, because there is accessibility, let's say hypothetically, to land, there is accessibility and opportunity that exists for you to be able to identify funds and the top tier educated persons or those aspiring towards things to pull them in and give them opportunities. There are these things. But the one thing that needs to happen is political will, the determination to identify and take this sort of a, no pun intended, this brave step, this significant step to be able to identify the talent that exists in our community, provide them with the incentives, and give them an opportunity to move forward. Do you believe that we have the political will to change what needs to happen?
I think we need the perception, first of all. We need to think in a paradigm quite different than organized politics. In a way, by politics, I mean you have polarization between one group and the other group.
Mm-hmm.
there should be common ground for there to be cooperation in terms of economic development, educational development, and other important and intrinsic areas where it shouldn't matter.
Right, the common goals.
Right, the common national goals that citizens aspire towards. And we shouldn't divide on those. Those are the platform should be such that there are certain things which are national in scope and not political in terms of polarization, and agree that on those particular matters and agree to cooperate on those issues so that we are not divided.
Mm-hmm. I love this. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're following along, I just want to kind of get this out there, and I'm going to take this quick commercial break. We're going to get into the futuristic concept and talk about the way forward, 50 years and beyond. I'm sitting with none other than Mr. Rawson McDonald. He is absolutely blowing my mind, and I must tell you, I truly, truly enjoy this conversation. This is The Foundation with Howard Grant. Quick commercial break. Be right back after this.
The Foundation.
At Marco's Pizza, we never skip on quality or ingredients. Save some cash and satisfy your cravings with our new carry-out medium two-topping pizza for only $12.50. That's right, order two of your favorite toppings like sausage and green peppers on one medium pizza for only $12.50. Fat inclusive on our app or online. Made daily with fresh dough, our signature sauce, and fresh cheese. Only at Marco's Pizza. Restrictions apply.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
Guardian Radio and the Foundation are on the move.
Bahamas, this one's for you.
SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Every Thursday, the Foundation with Howard Grant will highlight small businesses throughout the country, far and wide. Your products, services, prices, and personality. We want to hear it all. Get your 30 or 60 second advertisement heard on air at a fraction of the cost. We here at the Foundation understand the times and don't want you to be left behind. With Guardian Radio, you reach your specific demographic, and it is unmatched.
We reach thousands daily.
Get your products off the shelf and your services in their hearts. Small Business Thursdays with the Foundation, only on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. For more information, call 302-2300 or the Help Me Howard line at 827-0111. SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Get your business moving today.
You've tried everything. ASUS, with your mother's cousin's sister's auntie, and even hiding your money under your mattress. But is your money safe? Your Bahamian dollar deposit in a member bank or credit union is insured up to $50,000. If anything happens, your deposit up to the insured value will be returned to you thanks to Deposit Insurance. Visit Deposit Insurance Corporation at www.dic.bf.
Protection for your money guaranteed with DIC.
Kalik is proud to be 50. Kalik is taking the celebration to Charlotte Street July 7th for an All Bahamian Street Party. The Kalik All Bahamian Street Party will feature a live performance by Visage, a special Bahamian menu from the chefs at the London, Kalik beer specials all night, and a late night Junkanoo rush out. Kalik's Junkanoo Street Party, July 7th, starting at 8 p.m. on Charlotte Street, featuring Visage and a Junkanoo rush out. Kalik, the beer of the Bahamas, reminds you to drink responsibly.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. 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 The foundation. The foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant in your company, live and in full effect, the foundation on this beautiful Tuesday, July 4th. I hope you're enjoying this beautiful day. If you're out there, going to hold your little sparklers and so forth and so on this evening and be able to see the fireworks. I hope you guys are getting ready to be able to enjoy that wherever you go to look at that. And we say happy independence to the United States of America. And we are 6 days away from enjoying the 50th and celebrating the 50th anniversary here in the country in commemoration of the 50th year. I thought it necessary, very grateful for the opportunity to be able to sit in this space, but I thought it necessary to return to the foundation and return to not necessarily the idealism, but return to the spirit that was the catalyst of the change that we enjoy, the change that we see, and whether or not we should reinvoke and trouble the proverbial stagnant waters of our community and get back to some things. If you're just tuning in, I don't know where you've been, but we're talking with none other than Mr. Rawson McDonald. He has given us a tremendous account of not just the facts and figures, but the intangibles, the spirit, the idea, the charged atmosphere, and he's given life to it. He calls it the zeitgeist, right? You say the Germans call it the zeitgeist of a generation that was invoked at this time and everyone kind of plugged into that. Mr. McDonald, before we get out of here, I want to talk to you about some stuff. Future. We did past, we did present, and I want to talk to you futuristically. I want to talk to you about next week, God Spare Our Lives. I'm going to have a conversation with some young persons who are off in college, off in university, here locally that are in college, that are critical thinkers that can be able to speak to what needs to happen for the country going forward. The same, you know, how do we invoke these particular things? And I want to know, in the spirit of urban, right, let me be decent, is there room or the possibility of room for a unicall or unicom 2.0? Second iteration of a concept, an idea that troubled the waters of those persons who are thinkers in our society to lead to the critical thinking for growth. Talk to me about it.
I think we need Unicom 2.0 even more than we needed Unicom 2.1.
My God, talk to me.
Because the country is not the same country we were 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the complication and the complexity of the issues that we're going to be facing in the next 50 years are quite different than the ones we're facing today. So we're going to need to encourage people to have a sense of critical thinking, to be able to engage intellectually, to be able to accept criticism without dividing, to be able to draw upon the resources of older people, because we live in a youth culture where when you become 65, the sense is that you're not really relevant any longer. And so we need to capture the young, the middle-aged, and the old to be able to get the ideas and the knowledge which have accumulated from all of them. Because as we go forward, we're going to have demographic problems, we're going to have problems in terms of how you sustain development over an extensive period of time. What's the quality of life going to be like? What's the standard of life going to be like? What kind of a structure we can have as a society? How are we going to live as a whole? What's our value going to be? And people need the space to think about this and to be able to assist whichever government there is in power.
I was just about to ask you this.
To help, to give them ideas when to you resolve start, these kinds of issues.
When you start to talk about young, middle age and old, and being able to capture the imaginations, what is the proverbial net that can be used to capture them into one space to at least pull the pulp of their intellectual capacity and, you know, their ideas and put it on tablets? what is the net that we use? Is that net politics? Is that net religion? Is that net faith? Is that net community? It's all
of
them.
But I think it's a sense of community. I think that around the world, particularly in the United States, there is this polarization. What polarization does is divides people.
Yeah.
We need to have a tent where people can come into it. Because, first of all, we are a very small country.
Yes.
We don't have that many specialized people like larger countries. So mm-hmm. where we see talent and abilities and the willingness to cooperate and ideas and then the willingness to put those ideas into effect, we need to draw it together. And that's a challenge. We need to be able to identify talent and to be able to replicate it and give people space to be able to speak to issues and even disagree on those issues. But to be able to strategically plan and think about, we need that quality of people with the mindset to do that. And again, looking at the nation as a whole, not just Nassau, we need plans for every island in the archipelago.
Yeah.
So it's going to require a lot of critical thinking. So our education has got to be captured in such a way that there is... We've got to become more solution-oriented rather than just simply criticizing things. And so we need everybody on board.
I want to ask you one question. Do you believe, based upon the current layout, this gulf that is created as a result of polarization, do you believe that over the next 50 years... that there could exist room to eradicate this gulf or at least diminish it to the point where we could connect?
Yes, because the gulf is not ideological.
Mm-hmm.
The gulf isn't a gulf between the Serbs and the Croats, where you have a history of animosity, you have a different language, you have a different religion, you have a different culture. You have fundamental differences which you've had for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bahamas, we do not have that. We don't have any ethnic cleansing. We don't have any traditional animosities, historical animosities. And we don't have any kind of real problems in bringing our people together. We are basically one people. And we need to think, though, in terms of organically as a society, as a whole.
Isn't that something? We are, you said, basically one people. From every sect of our society, in every sphere and sub-society, we have one faith, one belief, we're family, we could see who we are. This one thing divides us perpetually, and that's politics.
That's right. The leadership has to, not only in politics, but leadership from below, in the churches, in the civic societies, and the lodges, have got to come together and have to break down those barriers. Because these are false barriers. We were in this boat together. The Bahamas is a rich country. The Bahamas is a wonderful country that can do far better. We have GDP of $11 billion. We could be beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we need to deal with residual effects of poverty in certain areas in our society.
I feel like we could eradicate that entirely.
But we've got to plan to do it.
Yeah.
And then we've got to give our people a sense that they can depend upon themselves, that they can organize for themselves, and they can solve the problems in their communities.
But as
we need some form of local government to empower people to resolve fundamental issues in their communities.
Real local government.
Yes, I'm talking about real local government.
Now, you see, as we said, the branding, political organization branded, and more specifically, the PLP, whether consciously or otherwise, has branded this particular mindset that caused the crowd, the grouping, to bottleneck and run into their organization for assistance, for hope, for help, because this is what we distribute. We are in it where rising tides lift all boats. We're doing all the heavy lifting. We're doing this mindset that's seared, this branding that's seared into the minds of the Bahamian people. How do we eradicate that now?
Well, it's a new concept, you know. Before, in the 1950s, I grew up in the 1950s, you know, people did things for themselves.
Yeah.
People were straw vendors. They had their petty shops. They had their jobs in the hotels. But they looked after themselves in the community. They didn't expect any government to do anything for them. They had their barrel societies. They had their savings and the post office saving bank and so on and so forth.
So they had a sense of self-sufficiency and a sense of independence and a sense that they could do things for themselves. And they were empowered to do things for themselves.
Has the acceptance of independence, did they swap independence for this perpetual reliance?
I think the way we are organized, I think that organizations should be sustained at the level at which the need arises. Because let's say that you are in a particular area, constituencies, the question of garbage, the question of your schools, the question of your parks should be decided at that level.
Yeah.
You know, what it does is it gives people an interest in their own environment and their own surroundings, and that they have power over that to be able to resolve those kinds of issues. It will teach our people how to take decisions. And it should be such that people who live in that particular community would come together as a group of people, because there's no division over politically about moving garbage or painting the schools.
That got
to
be done.
It has to be done. It's mm-hmm. a need which has to be done. And since we all live in the same area and the same community, it's a community effort, apart from ideology or anything else. Mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of thinking we have to adopt and we have got to go back to. We used to be like that. We're no longer like that.
Tell me this, as we wrap up. The next dispensation, the next 50 years, it sits on the shoulders of the next generation. Though we have a significant brain drain, it's pronounced, we can identify that it's not a farce, it's not a fallacy. We don't think it's happening. We can see it every single day. But it doesn't negate the fact that the Bahamas is still here. What do you say to the next dispensation of leadership over the next course of 50 years? Those persons who have this sort of an idea to revive the spirit that existed mid-60s and say, this is the course that we go. What do you say to those particular persons that want to move in that direction? What are some of the advice that you'd give them?
Number one, I think I'd say that God has given us a beautiful country. It is geographically located next to the most powerful and advanced country in the world. Thirdly, we have access to medicine, education, technologies, which we wouldn't have if we were not so closely aligned. Our currency is tied to the U.S. currency, one-to-one. Our trade is mainly, predominantly with the U.S., So in terms of our ability to exist economically, we are in a solid foundation. My concern basically is social, not economic, because man is a social animal. We need to be able to teach our people and train our people for civic responsibility, the kind of citizen we really want to be. Do we want to obey traffic rules? Do we want to obey all the rules required to live in a civilized society? As normal human beings, that's what we need. And then finally, I think we need to go back to faith, the fundamental faith that brought us where we are. I think we need to be careful that with the relaxation of the laws on Sundays where you can shop and do all kinds of things, that Sunday becomes a day for shopping. And we don't have enough time to rest and enough time for dedication to our spirits. That you start off talking about the spirit. I think to be refueled with the spirit, we need to be in spaces which is sacred, and that's the church. And that's where we used to be. I think we need just simply to go back to what we used to do in those specific areas.
I want to say this to you. You have, we have 5 minutes before we get out of here, but I want to read a couple of these texts. It says, Mr. Grant, it's a great show again. Mr. McDonald is a very intelligent man. In the matter of fact, their whole family, plus they are from the Great Cat Island, where many, many individuals who've played a big role in our society, education, politics, armed forces, singing, songwriting, folk. Listen to me. It's not like a whole Ministry of Tourism advertisement for Cat Island. You need to stop it, right? So he started to talk about these things. He says that the list goes on from Cat Island. And he also says it come from A. Stubbs from Dumfries, Cat Island, right? This is a person's being able to send some information out. Let me see if I can read another text. It says, as Bahamians, are we truly educated? Are we indoctrinated into thinking as Europeans, a.k.a. Western Asians? Question 2, do we really engage in governance, or do we or are we managers of a colonial system from the British? Why have we not examined the history of Africa people and what they were doing before the slave trade, a.k.a. the Maaf? The Maaf. Go talk to me about it. I mean,
well, first of all, I think Africa was an advanced civilization when slavery came about. And Africa today is still on the trajectory of innovation and technology. The question about having a European mind, you can educate the mind, but the mind chooses what it's going to believe and accept. So there is no way in which we are tethered to either European thinking or Asiatic thinking. We are thinking, and the things we think about is what's in the front of us that we actually see. I do not believe it's possible to indoctrinate a man to the point where you indoctrinate him out of who he is as a person. So although there is some indoctrination in virtually everything that has happened to us, it does not mean that we do not could independently decide what we want to do.
This is an amazing
thing. If we know that we have been indoctrinated, then we know that we have to unindoctrinate ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's up to us.
There's another text that came through before we get out of here. It says, Mr. Grant, as a young man growing up, I was a keen admirer of Mr. McDonald and always wondered what happened to him. And I would have loved so much to have his contact. These ambitions asking for your contact. There was no one cooler and as well-spoken and well-dressed as this gentleman. This is the text that's coming through. Mr. McDonald, I want to thank you so much. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for being able to give us this sort of historical value that goes far beyond the facts and figures and spoke to the spirit of the matter. I want to thank you so very kindly for your contribution in those areas, in those ways, to be able to get those things done. I thank you. And I ask you, if you'd be so kind to join me again, because you touch on some things I want to expand on. You touch on some things I want to expand on, right? But I just want to let you know that if you ever find it necessary to kind of talk to the nation and really be able to spill this idea for the course and the direction that we need to go, the seat's always open to you, my brother.
Thank you so much. I certainly appreciate my time here. And thank you so much for this opportunity to express myself.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so very kindly for tuning in today. I know that you wanted to be able to participate individually and be, but I didn't want to deviate. I kind of had this thing laid out, and I'm hoping that you truly enjoyed the conversation. It's not a political conversation. It was a conversation about national growth and development and the idea of where we can go beyond our jubilee. I'm so happy to be with you today, ladies and gentlemen. 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant in your company, The Foundation, on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, July 4th. Tomorrow, we're going to have Sir Franklin Wilson, joining us to talk to us a little bit more about UNICOL, the spirit, the concept, the idea of what's happening during that time. I hope you guys tune in for the conversation. You want to hear a little bit more, hit me up, 827-0111, 827-0111. And if you want to be able to get into more conversations like this, hit me up, man. Let me know, because I want to take this far and wide. I tell you, we're going to China. I'm going to the Invest Fest. I'm in Atlanta at the end of August. Come on, man, I need participation. I need you guys to be able to support me and help me going out there so I can bring this information live and in full effect to you in a timely manner. I thank you guys for participating. Thank you for being a part of it. I want you to stick and stay for Shivago Lang with Z Live right after this. Guys, have a beautiful day. See you tomorrow.
The Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. Foundation.
Girl, why are you so sweaty?
Darla, getting ready for the Bahamas Games.
Bahamas Games? What that is?
The game started in 1989 under the then Minister of Sports, Peter J. Bethel, and now Minister Mario Boleg.
When the games is?
This July 7th to the 15th.
For more info,
go to www.bahamasgames.org. www.thebahamasgames.org or call 322-1029.
With over 25 years in business, nothing says commitment to our people, culture, and service like Rev. And this year is no different. We will continue to elevate your home experience for you to create and share memories for years to come, while keeping you connected to the people and things you love most. Our pledge to provide quality service each year remains true. Rev is made for you.
My business couldn't survive without my credit card machine from Fidelity.
It's fast, convenient, and my clients love it.
My sales increase, and I can track my earnings.
Get your credit card machine from Fidelity today.
Call 356-7764. Fidelity, we're good for
you. A lot of folks are wondering, what is the Agrarian Awards? It's an award show to celebrate the people who produce the food that feeds the country. So September 16th, we're giving out trophies and money to young farmers, backyard farmers, sheep runners, goat herders, pea pickers, onion planters, basically everyone. But we couldn't fit all that on the invite, so we put Agrarian Awards instead. Go to adobahamas.org to find out how to nominate your favorite agrarian. The Agrarian Awards, September 16th.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.